Well, if you have an ache or a pain or a sprain or maybe a strain, you are listening to the right radio program. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Laurie Tyne-Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, who is an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Medical School. They come by about once a month to talk with us about how to deal with all those aches and pains, and I hope I don't want you to have them, but I hope you'll call in if you do, or if you have a question. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Laurie, welcome back.
Thank you.
Bill, nice to see you.
Good morning. Yeah, I wonder if we should add bruises, dealing with bruises onto our title, with all the falls that people have had.
I went skiing yesterday at Tyrol Basin for the first time this year. My son, my 9-year-old Nate, has taken up snowboarding. So he convinced me to go with him yesterday. And I took my share of falls, and I'm feeling that in my back, my lats from poling, poles, and a couple falls that I did, mostly just so my son didn't feel bad.
You'll have to call him later on in the show, Laurie.
Exactly. See if I can get some good advice.
Right. But
well, when you do slip on the ice, I mean, sometimes you slip and fall, and you're not really hurt. You fall in the snow, but then you really feel it the next day.
It's not the fall, it's the sudden stop at the end.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And that impact, it jars all your joints. And even if your joints haven't given you any problems, sometimes that jolt can stir up some things that are underlying. And if you have some arthritis, even though if it hasn't been problematic, it can get really stirred up. In older folks, when they fall on an outstretched arm, it's pretty easy to tear your rotator cuff, fracture your forearm.
Oh.
So there are a lot of things that can happen.
So be careful out there.
Absolutely.
Paul and Nina, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
I'm calling because I went snowboarding this Saturday. I didn't take any major spills, but after about 3 hours of riding, I went into the lodge to sit down and have some lunch, and I had some shooting pains come right up my back. And sitting has been a problem ever since. So,
well, it's a segue into what Laurie described, is that when you have some pretty intense activity, and 3 hours is a pretty long time frame, it's not unusual. And the idea with sitting is that kind of goes along with the position you are in snowboarding, and plus in snowboarding you have the jarring along with it. I think it's important that if possible you try to minimize your sitting. If you're on the phone, if you can stand, every 20, 30 minutes make an excuse to get up and just walk, even just down the hallway. And when you are sitting, you want to maintain that normal curve in your back, the lordosis. And so if you have a good chair that supports your back, sit back against it. Or if you have a sweatshirt or a knapsack, you can put in the small of your back. But you're probably going to be sore for a few more days yet. And the sitting won't come back 100% quickly. But over the next couple of weeks, you should be fine again.
Add in some stretches too, some knee to chest, lying on your back, bringing your knees up to your chest, straightening your knees out to stretch your hamstrings and the back of your legs, pulling your knee across your chest to stretch your buttocks.
Mm-hmm. I was told to do a ibuprofen or anti-inflammatory regularly and a heat pack on it. Is that?
You can take some medication for pain. I think, frankly, Tylenol or one of those medications for pain is probably just as effective.
Okay.
I don't know that an anti-inflammatory is necessary at this point, but whatever kind of gives you a little bit more comfort at this point in time. And if in 7 to 10 days you're having sharp pains or still a lot of pain with sitting, then you need to be reevaluated. Because if this is just typical muscle soreness, it should resolve within 7 days.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Dave in St. Francis, on to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I'm 54 years old, and I have arthritis in my knee, my right knee, and I've always been very active. I was a concrete worker. Now I have a different job, but I like to walk, and every day I take usually a 45-minute walk, but now, for the past year, this knee's been hurting me every day, and I don't want to quit doing exercises, And what should I do?
You've had it diagnosed, you've had a radiograph, or...
Well, I go to the VA, and the doctor told... Well, it's always a little bit swelling.
Okay.
And he said that's fluid from arthritis, so...
Okay. All right. Have you had any physical therapy for your knee?
No, I really can't take time off my job.
Well, you know, I think taking time off for one or two visits to see a physical therapist would be in your best interest, even though you're busy and we're all busy. But finding ways for you to be able to keep your exercise, maybe modify things that you're doing in your work, talk about your shoe wear, maybe a sleeve or a brace for your knee, can certainly extend the life of your knee. And again, seeing things that you're doing at work, perhaps are things you're doing at your job now that are making it worse. That
No. I'm not. I have a driving job. So, could I? How about getting a bicycle? Would that be less pressure, do you think, on my knee?
Depends upon where in your knee the arthritis is. So, for example, if the arthritis is primarily under your kneecap, a bicycle could actually be a little bit worse. If the arthritis is in the weight-bearing portion, then it's probably better, which is why I'm suggesting that you get a little bit closer examination of your knee to see if you have any strength deficits that can be remediated. The physical therapist can talk to you about shoe wear. And there's also other kinds of injections that you can get in your knee to help with arthritis before it gets too severe. There are certain braces you can use. It's going to be really important for you to stay active, and it sounds like you're on the brink of losing your activity because of this knee. Your knee will only worsen if you stop your activity, so you need some strategy so that you can stay active. So you need some help in that department.
Okay. I agree with you there. Do you think I should continue to walk or walk less or what?
I'd continue to walk as long as you're not walking with a limp. And if you can get in a pool at all and walk in a pool, that would be preferable because it'll take some of the weight off your joint.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Dave. Lori and Franklin, we're on to you now. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Hey, folks, I've got a sciatic nerve problem. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I've had the, what do you call it, the MAG MRI, and it shows some protruding discs at the bottom of my spine. And then I went out and shoveled and lifted the snow. And ever since December 2nd, you remember that snow, I have had sciatic nerve pain. It's gotten better so that I can now sit. It is a pain in the butt, you know.
Yes,
and I have been able to sit, and then I did a little something just kind of pushing the snow yesterday, and I thought I could get away with it, and this morning, not so good. So what in the heck have what am I dealing with here? And what do I need to do? I am taking, a pain reliever to reduce the inflammation.
Okay.
That's all I've been doing, and I've been reducing that until now. Maybe today I'll take one again.
Okay. All right.
Well, what you describe as worsening your symptoms of shoveling is consistent with certain kinds of disc problems. And if you have a bulging disc or protruding disc, it can irritate a nerve root or a couple nerve roots up in that low lumbar area. And it's the bending combined sometimes with twisting that puts a lot of pressure in and around those discs. So it's pretty consistent with what you described, what they found on the MRI. What you can do, both short and long term, since it has been now about 6 weeks, and it sounds like it flared up fairly easily with just pushing snow, is if you haven't seen a physical therapist, I would go see one. There are specific exercises designed to get pain out of your leg and out of your butt up towards your back. And once the pain is centered in the back, then typically you can get rid of it. But you have to get rid of the leg symptoms first. And there are some exercises that actually can make the sciatica worse. But there's a set that's designed to relieve the leg pain. And it's very simple exercise you can do at home and you can do on your own time. So that would be one of my recommendations. Short term, we're going to get more snow, it sounds like, tonight, next couple of days. If there's any way someone else can shovel for you or snow blow for you, I would highly recommend it. Because, again, it sounds like you're at risk for a pretty significant flare-up.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for your call as well. Appreciate it, Lori. And Gary in Milwaukee, we're on to you. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I picked up a real nice elliptical at the sports show a couple years ago, and I've been working at, you know, trying to lose some weight and have dropped about 35 pounds. And I want to continue working on my elliptical. I'm doing a fat burn, and then I'm doing a cardio, and then I split the two with some weight lifting. And one of the problems I'm having is that the balls of my feet seem to be going to sleep while I'm on the elliptical. It's a half an hour, 20 minutes into my routine, and I've tried different shoes and I've tried different things, and the only thing that seems to relieve the symptoms is making a conscious effort while I am doing the elliptical workout and keeping my heart rate at the proper rate, is to just kind of wiggle my toes and try to step a little different. I fractured my left foot many, many years ago on the outside of the foot while I was dancing, and that doesn't seem to be the issue. It's actually the ball of the foot. Do you have any suggestions at all for me? Or
okay,
it'd be nice if I had some suggestions for you, because I just got off the elliptical before I came here, and the same thing happens to me. If that makes you feel any better, probably not. And I found that I've tried the same thing. I've tried taping my feet. I've tried my running shoes with and without orthotics. I've tried five different pairs of shoes, and nothing seems to matter. So what I do is the same thing you do. I wiggle my toes. I change directions. When I go backwards for a while, then I get the feeling back in my toes, and then I go forward again. I just keep switching it. And I just decided that it's a local circulation or nerve problem. A lot of my blood flow is being shunted to my working muscles higher up, and that it's a vascular, a neurovascular local condition, and as soon as I get off, it stops. And so I don't necessarily have anything great to add.
No. Gary, does it stop quickly for you as well when you get off?
It seems to go away, yes, if I do reverse my workout and put my more of my weight shifted to the heel of my foot, and then with the wiggling of my toes, the feeling comes back, but it comes back for a very short period of time, and then I'm back to where I was, and so it is a bit troublesome. One comment I'd like to make with your previous caller, 54-year-old gentleman with the knee issue. I've sprained both knees and had all kinds of knee issues, and I do the chondroitin and glucosamine with MS. I think it's MSM, and my knees don't click anymore when I'm on that daily.
Yeah, good for you,
Gary. The other thing, the pins and needles in the ball of your feet. Do you ever get it any other time besides when you're on the trainer?
No, just on the trainer.
Okay, yeah. All right. Then I think it ties in with what Lori just described. One thing to check is, and if you haven't done already, play with how tight you're tying your shoes. If you're cinching up really tight, especially near the top, that may cut off circulation a little bit. And I think it'd be important for you to do some stretching, of the big muscle groups in the calves and up in the thighs before you get on the trainer. That may buy you some more time before the tingling comes on as well.
Mm-hmm. And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault are guests today as we talk aches and pains. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Now we have some emails to deal with as well here today as we talk about aches and pains. Rebecca emailed us and was wondering about vibration boards or platforms, whether they're helpful in treating osteopenia. I'm looking for activities or treatments for osteopenia of the spine, especially the upper back and neck. And if the boards are helpful, do you have a one you'd recommend, and what would you suggest? I'm a 47-year-old white female.
Well, vibration is one of the new areas that they're testing, whole body vibration and parts of the body vibration to treat various conditions, including osteoporosis or osteopenia. So the research is still relatively new. There's no long-term studies. There's only short-term. There doesn't seem to be a downside to it. They seem to be, in some studies, showing some benefit. So I talk it over with my physician, whoever is managing your osteopenia, and talk about how that fits in with medically managed and lifestyle managed treatment for osteopenia. So I would certainly not dismiss it. I think it has some benefits, but it should be part of an overall comprehensive treatment program.
Okay. Another email from Scott in San Diego, California. Commutes daily to work by bicycle in San Diego. Yesterday, I strained my back while cleaning my pool, which doesn't loosen up. Yeah, which doesn't loosen up by swimming since the water is cold due to it being winter. You should see the water here.
We have ice in our pools.
Exactly.
We don't have any water.
Exactly. I'm having a hard time feeling sorry for anyone who rode their bike to work and then hurt their back cleaning their pool. I'd say, if anything, you should get your son to clean your pool for you.
But now, what about this hurt back here? My back hurt a bit while riding today. What can I do?
Well, I think it's similar to our first caller with the shoveling, our second caller with the shoveling. It's and with the pool cleaning, you're bent forward, or your trunk is forward flexed, and that the muscles are working hard, ligaments are working hard, and then when you ride a bike, you're in a similar position where you are bent forward.
Right.
And so I think if the pain is severe enough that you get off the bike and it's hard to function for an hour or two, it might be good to take some other mode of transportation, even just for a couple of days. But in the meantime, doing some gentle stretching. So like Lori described, stretching better when you're lying down on the floor as opposed to standing and doing toe touches. But lying on your back on the floor, gently pull your knees up towards your chest. Lying on your back with your knees bent and rock your knees from side to side so you do some gentle twisting. Then getting on your stomach and doing push-ups where you allow your stomach to sag down to the floor. Are just gentle ways to move your spine in all the different directions, but your spine's unweighted. And, you know, if this is a typical backache, within a week, week and a half, should be fine again. I think for people where they get into trouble, so they start having symptoms moving into their legs, or they start getting some numbness and tingling along with the backache, then that's a little different story. That's a little more serious.
And also some strengthening for the back. If you spend a lot of time in a bent over position, if you're sitting at a desk all day, sitting at a computer all day, sending emails, then strengthening your back muscles into extension is useful. And maintaining your weight, keeping your body weight down so you don't have such a forward load on your back.
All right, let's go to Stephen in West Bend next. Hi, Stephen.
Good morning. About 4 years ago, my left shoulder, after picking up a heavy weighted bunch of steel angle iron, I ripped or could feel a tear. And ever since then, I've had numerous cortisone shots. And recently, 2 weeks ago, this seems to happen about four or five times a year, where if I lift my elbow the wrong way, or just in case I was wrestling around with my nephew. And right now, I can barely raise a cup of coffee with my elbow going outward. I can bend my elbow from the floor to the ceiling, but as far as moving my elbow 90 degrees straight out, it's very weak and have no strength, and I get the sharp pain all the time. My question is this something I'm going to have to learn to live with, or should I probably have an x-ray done of it? And I guess I don't know what kind of repair are possibly in order for this.
How long ago was the original injury?
Probably 4 years.
Okay. And you've been treated just with cortisone shots? Have you had any other kind of treatment for it?
No, just through cortisone, through an orthopedic surgeon.
Okay. Well, the first step is to get some rehabilitation, to get some physical therapy to strengthen your shoulder and rehabilitate the muscles that are there. Chances are you injured some of the muscles around your shoulder with the original injury. The cortisone, all the cortisone does is kind of beats back the inflammation, but it doesn't do anything to restore health to the muscle and tendon units. So you're going to always be susceptible to re-injuring that area. So you really need to rehabilitate it. So,
have you had any experience with this type of injury, assuming that's what it is, people dealing with acupuncture?
I think acupuncture is useful for dealing with some of the pain that's associated with it, but generally not restoring the strength. From a sort of a traditional perspective, you need to restore the strength to the muscle tendon unit. Looking at it mechanically, if it's been injured, then the ability of that tissue to withstand loads needs to be increased, and you do that by strengthening. So
my favorite exercise would be swimming. I like to swim, and that I know would be working the shoulder, but obviously I haven't done that for the last couple of years that much.
Right, but you may need some basic strengthening first, because if you go in and start swimming, then you may actually make your shoulder worse. So you may need to have some very specific, directed strengthening exercises first, and then you can use swimming to maintain those gains once you've made them. But the first line of treatment for this kind of a problem is typically strengthening exercises, some physical therapy and strengthening exercises. And given how long it's been and how many recurrences you've had and you've never had any strengthening exercises, to me that's the most obvious place to start. So I go to your primary care physician, your orthopedic surgeon, and request some physical therapy.
That's where I'll start. Thanks.
Yep, Stephen.
Thanks, Stephen. Bill and Nina, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I'm wondering about the progression of the situation where gradually I've gotten to not be able to raise my chin high enough to empty a soda can. My neck won't bend back far enough.
Well, Bill, what do you think?
How long has this been going on, Bill?
Oh, I think it's been gradually developing over 20 years.
Okay. Have you had an injury to your neck?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Is there pain when you look up like that, or is it just that you just can't move in that direction?
It physically stops. It could hurt a little bit if I try to push it, but it just physically stops, and I can't raise my chin and my neck back.
Okay. All right. Do you have stiffness anywhere else to this degree?
No.
Okay. Well, you may have a little bit of arthritic changes in your neck. Looking up or extension is the direction that often gets limited most and earliest on. And you're right, you really can't force your way through it. It can be a combination of muscles that have become adaptively tightened over years and muscles that are somewhat weak on the opposite side of the neck. Also, some stiffness in the upper back can influence how much cervical or neck range of motion that you have. And looking up is we need to be able to move in that direction. As long as you're not having numbness or tingling down into your arms or into your feet, this certainly is not any kind of an urgent situation. But it's probably not going to get better on its own. And so if you're really distressed about this, I would see a physical therapist, and they could examine you and help guide you of what muscles should you be stretching, which ones strengthening, and also how to self-mobilize some of the parts of your back that could be stiff that could have led to this for you.
So you think muscles are involved. I wondered if maybe calcium deposits were simply limiting the range of motion.
Well, it's calcium deposits, if it's anything the calcium, it's probably bone. You may have some osteophytes or some bone spurs if you have arthritis in your neck.
I do.
And that would account for it. And muscles can adaptively shorten and weaken that go along with a posture-limited movement. And so muscles can become part of the problem over time. So it typically is not just a joint problem at this stage. And so there's different kinds of stretching designed for the joints of the neck versus muscles in the neck. And I think to give you your best bet to get some of the range of motion back, you want a combination, a program that that combines both of those tissue groups.
All right.
Okay, stretching. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you for calling. Ken in Elkhorn, we're on to you now. Hi, Ken.
Hi there. I'm 56 years old, and I've got a problem with my left Achilles tendon. And I do quite a bit of hiking. I hike with a group on the Ice Age Trail a couple times a week. I've laid off of that for about 2 weeks now. I don't know exactly what I did. I would say I've had the problem for 3 or 4 months, and I'm just toughing it out, and I don't do a lot for it. I put on something called Unkers sometimes when it really It's an Amish. Mm-hmm. It looks like Vicks Vapor Rub, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
That's about all I do for it.
So you don't know what started it three or four months ago?
No, I could not pinpoint that.
Okay, and it hurts right down on the tendon above your heel?
Yes, and sometimes there's even a little bulge there.
Yep. Tendinosis. The sort of the first line of treatment is preventing anything that's perpetuating the problem. So look at your shoes, things like that, what you wear around your house. Make sure that they have a sufficient heel in them. Then the next step would typically be stretching the Achilles.
Okay.
Not to the point where it's painful, but to the point where you feel a stretch in there.
Uh-huh.
And then a strengthening program. The strengthening program focuses on a muscle contraction type called an eccentric, and that's the lowering or lengthening contraction as compared to a shortening contraction, such as when you're lifting something. So for your Achilles, it would look something like this. You're standing with your heels over the edge of a step.
Uh-huh.
You go up on your toes,
uh-huh,
on both feet. Then you lift up your right foot and you lower yourself down with the left. Both feet down to raise up, lower with the left. Okay?
Uh-huh.
And that would be an eccentric strengthening program. And you might start something like that. Repetitions to fatigue or pain, 3 or 4 times a day, combined with the stretching. And it may feel worse before you get better. But if you can stick with it, you should come out on the other side of it. The way to progress it is actually first to speed up the rate at which you're lowering, so lowering yourself a little bit faster but controlled, and then when you can tolerate that, to add an extra load, such as a weight on your shoulders or something.
So what I want to do is do all the lowering, take my right foot off the ground, and mm-hmm, do all the lowering with the left.
Correct.
Correct?
Yeah. See how that works for you.
Should I be icing?
Yes. Yep, icing will be fine, especially after a bout of activity.
Okay. Should I lay off the hiking? Sometimes I'll go somewhere between 3 and 6 miles.
Uh-huh. How does it feel afterwards?
All depends on the terrain.
Okay.
We hike in different places.
Okay. Well, try to stay flat if you can.
That don't happen on the Ice Age Trail.
Flatter. On terrain that doesn't hurt so much.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as long as you're not limping.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck.
Give it a try. If not, call us back next month.
All right, Ken. Thank you very much. And by the way, you'll be back on February 16th. So that's next month.
Excellent.
Mark that on your calendar, Ken. Becky in Reedstown, we're on to you now. Hi, Becky.
Hi. I want to feel less old when I do all the things I want to do. Problem is, my family has Ehlers-Danlos, and so do I. I'm 49, and to make everything worse, I had 13 years ago, I had a really bad car accident where I ended up with one leg that's a whole lot less strong because it just got smashed. But at least it's not too short. Mm-hmm. I was pleased with that one. I have really bad, or really chronic lower back stiffness. Sometimes it's the bones that feel sore. Most of the time it's just the muscles. The things I do to, and I do a lot of yoga, but it does not really seem to make anything much better, just because I like to do yoga. My favorite activities are hiking and bicycling and gardening and especially belly dancing, which makes it really, really hard with a stiff lower back.
Yeah.
I need some help.
Okay.
Yeah. Becky, do you know why the back is stiff? Have you seen anybody in the past for it?
I go to a chiropractor a lot, and he's more of a spiritual thing. He talks to me about 15, 20 years ago, I had a difficulty emotionally, and it's manifesting now, which is a nice thing for him to say, but I'm not sure what I can, that doesn't seem appropriate currently.
Right.
So, that's about it, was when I go to have anybody look after things.
Okay. All right. Well, one of the things that can go along with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome actually is laxity. I mean, there's a number of things, but in terms of the musculoskeletal system and orthopedic problems is laxity of the joints. And so the muscles have to work harder to provide stability, and certain muscles need to be stronger than they would otherwise to give you enough stability so you can be as active as it sounds like you are and not be dealing with this stiffness. Yoga is a very good activity for most people, but if you're fairly mobile in some parts of the body and stiff in a relatively local small area, it's really difficult to localize the stretch to the area that you need it. And so my recommendation would be is to see a physical therapist who can examine your back and compare your back findings to the rest of your overall flexibility. They might be able to provide some real specific stretching, much that you can do on your own, and there's also some specific stabilization exercise that you could do in addition to the yoga. And you could also walk through a lot of the poses you get into during yoga with the therapist, and they might be able to help modify or redesign things for you a little bit.
I can't afford a physical therapist. We haven't got that kind of health coverage.
Okay.
I can't afford to go to one.
Okay. Well, here's an option. I'm not guaranteeing it's going to work, but you can call a local hospital or a clinic. There's times they see patients who cannot pay. They provide, you know, a couple of visits at no cost. There may be some free clinics in your area that they may be aware of as well. I know here in Madison, we run some clinics like that with our students. So there's students and faculty there for people who don't have health insurance or don't have the coverage. So there could be that window for you. Mm-hmm. But based on how long it's been for you and the activities that you're involved in, I think you're going to need something like that to really put a dent in the symptoms that you have.
Yeah.
Well, then it's probably not going to happen. We don't have any free things in the area where I live. It just isn't the case. I was hoping for something that didn't call for another professional.
Well, here's an option for you, and it's you can do whatever you want. If you want to leave your name and contact information, I'll be happy to contact you after the show, later on today or tomorrow. If you want to share where you're living, I can give you some contacts in that area that you can decide if you wish to call and try to go that route or not.
Okay. That sounds doable.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. Were you going to mention anything as well?
I was just going to say that I see patients with Ehlers-Danlos, and I really agree with Bill that, too much mobilization, the yoga could be placing a lot of stress on her back if the things aren't done exactly correct. Ehlers-Danlos isn't the first yoga isn't the first thing I'd think of. Nor a chiropractic manipulation for somebody with Ehlers-Danlos, because too much laxity is the underlying problem. We usually go the other direction with more of a stabilization approach.
Well, I'll tell you what, Becky, we'll put you on hold then, and at Bill's suggestion, and Jim Packard will get your contact information, and Bill will get back to you then. So we'll put you on hold, and thank you very much for calling. And take some more calls here. Let's go to Shirley in Prentice next. Shirley, hello to you.
Hello, and thank you. My problem is my right knee. About 2.5 weeks ago, in the middle of the night, it started to ache. And since then, I have seen my primary care doctor, and she has got an appointment for me this week to see a specialist, but I'd like your take on it. My knee is swollen, and it seems to be a little worse each day, and my leg is swollen, and my foot is a little swollen, too. I didn't do anything that I know of that started it hurting. I didn't twist it or sprain it. I walk every day, and I'm just the same way. So what could... it even crossed my mind, what is gout? Could it possibly be something other than a sprain?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's unlikely to be a sprain if you didn't have any injury that you can remember.
Uh-huh.
So a sprain usually occurs as a result of some sort of sudden movement or injury or fall. For people who have arthritis, if they go out and they do too much on it, their knee can swell up. And because of the reactive synovitis inside their joint.
Oh.
So
they did take x-rays and said there's cartilage left there. But maybe it is that I've got arthritis in seems like nearly every joint.
Right, right. But it would be unusual for that much swelling to come on that quickly, especially going all the way down into your leg and foot. So other than that, I think you should keep your appointment with your specialist and have someone take a closer look at it because it doesn't fit the normal pattern of what we would see someone with arthritis.
Okay, I do keep Copax on it and elevate my leg. Well, thank you for the information.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling. And we have an email from Russell who has a comment about the caller earlier with the numb feet. On his elliptical trainer, Russell says he probably has what's called a Morton's neuroma or some form of nerve impingement on the ball of his foot. He says it can be fixed by having a podiatrist build a small bump or cushion in his shoe that helps keep the bones in his foot from pinching the nerves while exercising.
Well, a Morton's neuroma is a common problem that's found in the forefoot or ball of the foot, and he did describe symptoms that were pretty localized in the ball of his foot. But typically with a neuroma, you would find that you get those same symptoms with other activities, not with just the elliptical. So that's kind of why I dismissed that as I was running through the differential diagnosis in my head. So it certainly is possible. Again, Bill and I were talking about the mechanics of that and just talking about why it only bothers him on the elliptical but not when doing other activities. You know, when you're walking or running, you have a period where your foot is not in contact with the ground. And so there's a brief time where you have a relief of the pressure on the bottom of your foot, whereas on the elliptical, your foot is constantly in contact with the foot pad, and your foot is always in a neutral or flex position, whereas when you're running, it has the opportunity to flex and extend at the ankle, and I think that probably aids the circulation. But certainly checking with a podiatrist and seeing if a podiatrist has anything else to offer or checking for a neuroma, it's pretty easy to see if you have a neuroma. If you pinch between the bones of your foot, up in the ball of your foot, it'll be exquisitely tender.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he didn't describe so much pain as opposed to falling asleep. And my experience, people who had Morton neuroma, the pain doesn't go away that fast, where it sounded like with him, as soon as he stopped the activity or shortly after,
it was gone.
It was gone. And that would be unusual for Morton's neuroma.
All right. Julie and Wild Rose, we turn to you next. Hi, Julie.
Hi there. Thank you. I was in a car accident about a month ago. And I had multiple rib fractures on my left side and also a lacerated spleen and a punctured lung. So what I do, I have a lot of pain and cramping in my left shoulder blade now, and I'm wondering what I might be able to do. My husband's been doing some light massage on that to try and get it to loosen up some, but I'm really unable to sleep because it happens all night long. I can deal with it during the day, but I can't deal with it at night because I don't get any sleep. And I wondered if you had any suggestions.
Yeah, well, you have a lot of things that your body is recovering from, and you have reasons to be hurting at this stage, even four weeks out. The shoulder blade pain, certainly it could be secondary to the local injury to your rib cage. It also could potentially be coming from your neck. It's not unusual to have problems with neck referring pain down to that shoulder blade area, and it can be very pronounced at night, no matter what you try to do with your pillow for comfort. But there are certain sleeping positions that are better than others, and I'm not sure if there's a position that you're comfortable in, but you want to stay off your stomach and avoid sleeping on your stomach because of the position that puts your head and neck in and can your shoulders. If you're lying on your back, you want the middle of your neck supported. If you can bunch your pillow up, or if you can take a bath towel, fold it in half and roll it up and stick it inside your pillowcase and try to position that little thicker part in the middle of your neck. It's kind of like a low back support we give for people for sitting, and we can do it similarly for the neck. Mm-hmm. Also, if you're sleeping on your side, then that rolled-up towel can take up space, you know, between your ear and your shoulder blade and just support your neck as well.
Okay.
I don't know how many pillows you have around your house, but besides for your head and neck, if you're on your side, having a pillow underneath that top arm just to support the shoulder?
I've been using a body pillow.
Okay, perfect.
I sleep on my side most of the time.
Okay.
But I haven't really paid attention to supporting my neck like you suggested.
Yeah, I would try that.
Okay.
And the I would try that for a few days, and if you're not better, if you haven't seen a physical therapist, it might be worth just a visit or two, have them examine you and see if this pain you're having is more related directly to your shoulder and your rib cage, and it's just the fact that more healing has to take place yet, or is it coming from your neck?
Mm-hmm.
And there may be some exercises they can give you that you can do before you go to bed at night that maybe will help with sleeping, as well as other positioning ideas.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. That's a tough one. Lori Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. Lori is senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Bill, an associate professor at the UW Medical School. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi. Talking with Lori Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault about aches and pains and sprains and strains on this edition of our program. Glad to have you listening in. And we have an open line or two, so we'll get you on fairly quickly at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Sandra now in Madison. Sandra, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a Feldenkrais practitioner, and I'm teaching Bones for Life, which is a program that I thought might be helpful to the woman who called in earlier who said she had osteopenia and was worried about her neck. This is a program that involves using vibrational movement, springy, bouncy movements, as well as walking and doing things like pushing on the wall with your feet or your hands, learning how to organize your a whole skeleton for an effective and safe weight-bearing support, which is so essential in strengthening your bones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And you're right, stressing the skeleton in a safe way. And I think things like you described with the Feldenkrais approach or with things like Tai Chi can certainly go along well with everything from diet, if medication is needed, what type. But they really need – someone needs to make some good lifestyle changes to address all these issues. But what you describe are very safe ways to load the bone, provide some weight bearing.
And may I tell you about the introductory class that I'm going to be giving?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm going to be teaching a class this coming Wednesday to introduce the Bones for Life program at the Willie Street Co-op from 6 until 8 p.m. And there's a Feldenkrais Awareness and Movement introductory class on Monday, the 19th, also at Willie Street Co-op.
Okay, and that's in Madison.
Great. There's a lot of different options out there for people who have osteoporosis or osteopenia or arthritis. The key is to match your needs to what's being offered. And some people like to do it through Tai Chi. Some like to do it in the water. Some like to do it walking with their friends or hiking the Ice Age Trail or working, you know, one-on-one with the Pilates instructor. Whatever works for you. The key is to find something that works for you, that's safe, and you enjoy doing, so you'll keep doing it.
And I should have asked, what is osteopenia?
Osteopenia is a weakening of the bones. It's not full-blown osteoporosis, but you're heading that direction. So it has to do – technically, it has to do with the bone density measures and how far you are off the norm. So when you're slightly below age norms, they classify you as osteopenic. And then when you're farther away from age – standardized norms, then you have osteoporosis.
Yeah, we all lose bone density. We peak at some point, typically in our 20s, and then we all start losing bone density. It's just at what rate, and they have age-based norms that they can compare when they do, whether it's on an X-ray or some other specialty imaging modality. They can use as a marker for your bone density compared to some sort of standard or norm.
All right. And Sandra, thank you again for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll go to Allison in Madison next. Allison, hi to you.
Hi. I'm calling in. This is perfect timing because I just found that I have tennis elbow on both sides.
Both elbows.
I don't play any tennis.
No.
I think that it's from pulling the start cord on my snowblower.
Oh, that hurts.
I switched arms, and then the other one started hurting right away. So my question is mostly about, like, taking care of it. The braces, the forearm band, I've learned a little bit about what you can wear. My questions are about, you know, I do have to shovel or snowblow, so how can I best, you know, take care of that condition while still doing what I need to do and remaining active? If the bands are in place, am I protected, or do I need more of a brace? Is it going to heal if I continue to do anything at all?
Wow, what great questions. Those are the questions that run through all of our minds. And when we're examining somebody, those are the things that we ask ourselves. Part of it has to do with what you do the rest of your day. You know, if you're someone who is very active in using their wrists and hands, say you're a potter, you're a painter, you're an electrician, you're a bricklayer, you know, where you're using your hands and gripping a lot, then it's going to be really hard to do. If you're, you know, relatively sedentary and not using your wrist and hands for a lot of your daily activities, you have a better chance of healing. So that's why we usually recommend that you see somebody who can sort through those things and come up with an individualized treatment plan. But the straps, the elbow straps, they create a new origin for the muscles so that it doesn't pull right on the tender part. The other option in braces is to use a wrist splint, especially if you're going to be doing snow shoveling. I would use a wrist support because it's actually the gripping and wrist movement that uses those muscles. Icing when you're done, stretching by sticking your arm straight out in front of you, palm down, bend your wrist down towards the floor and stretch that way. Gentle strengthening exercises by gripping. There's also a great deal of research out there in prolotherapy, injections of a specific solution around at the origin of that muscle that is helpful in remediating tennis elbow also.
And I would add that I had a snowblower until 3 years ago, and we had no snow, so I gave it to my father-in-law.
No!
You're optimistic
lives in Georgia
back then.
but the one I had, and it was fairly inexpensive, had an electric start.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you plugged it in and pushed the button, and it was a whole lot easier than the hand pull. So next time you're in the market, Allison, for a snowblower, look for that electric start. That could help.
Yeah,
good idea.
That pulling's also hard on your shoulder and on your back.
Yeah, it really is. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Wendy in Manitowoc, we're on to you now. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have problems with my knees ever since I was in my 20s. I used to do a lot of skiing in Seattle, and now in Wisconsin, they just hurt. I haven't done any skiing for a long time, but I did have an x-ray that said I have some bone spurring. It hurts. If I try to put any weight on my knee, especially in a squatting position, or if I'm bending it and I put any weight on it at all, it's excruciating, and it's just pretty painful all the time. I'd like to, you know, start going to the Y and wonder if there are some strengthening exercises I can do. If it is, I'm assuming spurring, is that like an arthritic change?
Yeah, spurring is one of the classic arthritic changes, and basically what's happening is your articular cartilage, your protective covering, is wearing away, and so your body's response to that is to try to put down more tissue for shock absorption, and what it does is it lays down more bone, so you end up getting spurs. So it's that's a pretty classic sign of arthritis. So yes, there are some strengthening exercises that you can do, and the difficult part is getting the prescription right, getting the right exercises for you that don't make your condition worse. So in general, you want to strengthen your quadriceps, or the big muscles in the front of your thigh, because they're great shock absorbers for your knee. But it needs to be done in a way that doesn't aggravate your existing arthritis. You also want to strengthen the big muscles around your hips, your gluteals and back, and on the outside, your gluteus medius, because those are also good shock absorbers and help improve the mechanics of how you move, which again takes some of the load and the stress off of the knee joint itself. So I think starting an exercise program is good. I would probably start with a physical therapist if I could, to get some specific instruction. in starting that strengthening program. And then once you kind of build yourself up and you're exercising regularly without symptoms, then going into a general fitness class would be good. But sometimes it's good to start out in physical therapy to kind of get you out of the hole and up and running, and then joining a regular exercise class or other facility.
Mm-hmm. What about using an elliptical trainer?
That could be fine, and it's good for general exercise. But typically for arthritis, we also want some targeted strengthening exercises, as well as looking at the mechanics of how you do things. You can get on an elliptical, and it could be great, or it could make your symptoms worse if your mechanics aren't good. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in the gym this morning, and I look around, and I see people exercising with less than optimal lower extremity mechanics. And I can see as I watch the kinds of stresses they're placing on some of their joints. And they may not be symptomatic now, but eventually they'll be in to see us.
Oh, boy.
So
job security for you.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
For sure.
That and those stiletto heels. I saw an article in the paper, or I saw something on TV when I was at the gym one day of someone showing other women how to walk in the stiletto heels. And I just thought, go, honey, go. You're going to keep me in a job.
I've seen a number of people who are in because of pain related to an exercise program they have started.
Thank you for calling, and thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look now at how you can deal with those aches and pains or sprains or strains that may have developed over the past, however long ago. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Glad to have you listening in. And so many callers online and so many emails, we're going to get right to it. And to Tom in Milwaukee, who's been waiting a bit. Tom, hello. Thank you for calling.
That's no problem. I have a question about my dislocated finger. I got a dislocated finger, I'd say, about 2 months ago. It's a full dislocation. My ring finger was 90 degrees over. I lost quite a bit of range of motion, at least 15 to 20%. My question is, I've been going to physical therapy, and they're stretching and pulling and stretching and pulling, but I'm not getting that range of motion that I had before because the knuckle is about 1.5 times the size it used to be. Mm-hmm. Now, my question is, are there surgical techniques that are used out there to open that area up and scrape out that scar tissue to where you can get that range of motion back?
Not usually in the finger. To the best of my knowledge, oftentimes the surgical procedure itself is like a trauma. You had a dislocation, you traumatized it, the body responds by laying down a lot of tissue to repair. You know, the tissue it repairs with isn't as good or high quality as the first stuff. It lays down a lot of it to compensate to some extent, particularly around the finger, the joints, the ligaments, just the mechanics of the fingers for fine movement are so precise that most surgeons don't want to go in and muck around in there too much. That being said, you really need a good surgeon and a good hand therapist that understand the mechanics of the hand. There are some not just stretching and joint mobilization techniques, but there's passive prolonged stretches that you can do, for example, braces and splints that hold you in a lengthened position if the issue is simply stretching tight tissue. If the problem is elsewhere, such as something blocking movement in the joint, then they might surgically remove something that's blocking motion. But they don't just go in and necessarily take out tissue because you have too much there.
You create
you
more trauma.
Yeah. Okay. Right,
well,
right, exactly.
Another question is, if they put on that device to straighten the finger, they want to put like a little jacket on that finger with screws to kind of straighten it out.
Uh-huh.
Will the body tend to absorb some of that tissue? Will that tissue break up with time, or will it not break up?
You mean with it's a passive prolonged stretching device?
Right. The scar tissue, the swelling of the knuckle, will that tissue break down and the body absorb it, or is it calcified and hardened and that it is what it is?
We don't know the answer at this point in time. Over time, I would say over the course of 2 years, the size of the knuckle should go down.
Oh, it can. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but it takes a long time for that tissue to remodel.
Oh, okay.
So it's not going to be immediate, but the stretching should lengthen it. And basically what you have is a remodeling process. And the remodeling can take easily up to 2 years before you end up with what would call the final product.
Oh, that long then. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, appreciate it.
So let me say one more thing, Tom, and that is, you know, the purpose of getting that joint moving now is to protect it in the long run, to maintain the joint movement, to maintain the health of your joint. So it's important in this window early on to get it moving. But it will continue to, again, to remodel over the course of a couple of years. But you don't want to wait 2 years to try to get it moving, because by then your joint will have deteriorated. So the window of time to get it moving is now. And then over the course of time, it will remodel in response to your working in that new range of motion.
All right. Good luck, Tom. Thank you. Ruth in Lyons, your turn now. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have relatively simple question for you, I think, and that is Charlie horses. I'll be sleeping, minding my own business, and in the middle of the night, I'll get a Charlie horse up and down my calf and in my feet. It makes me jump straight out of bed, and I have to do this dance where I'm putting pressure on my ankle and my calf in order to make it go away. Is it my diet, you think? I've heard bananas is supposed to be good.
Well, it can be a number of things, and it is painful. When you wake up, you have to get some pressure on it and just slowly stretch it out fast, because it is very, very uncomfortable. Ruth, how many is it happening every night? How many times a night?
No, it doesn't happen every night. It's intermittent. It'll come straight out of the blue. No forewarning. I've had the same type of thing happen sometimes when I'm doing step aerobics or even yoga in the middle of a stance. All of a sudden, my foot will have an attack.
Right. How long has this been going on?
Probably maybe 5 years.
Okay.
Intermittent.
Right, right. Has it gotten worse in the last 6 months?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, this kind of cramping at night can be due to lots of things. It can be due to something dietary, and bananas can help. And if that's the case, you should know really within a week or two that it's made a difference. Sometimes it can be related to overexertion of muscle groups in the calves and feet related to activity that day or the day before. This is waking you up. It can be vascular in nature. I mean, there's lots of different potential causes of this nighttime cramping. You know, I would try, if you know, have no allergies, I would try bananas, and you'll know pretty quickly whether that's going to be the case or not. If that doesn't work, you know, it probably wouldn't hurt to go in and see your physician and talk to your physician about what you're experiencing and how long you've been experiencing it. And see if they come up with a specific cause as to why this is happening.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Laura in West Bend, we're on to you now. Hi, Laura.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. I have a problem with my a tendon in my wrist running from my thumb down to my arm. About 10 months ago, when I had my baby, it got real bad, and I went in for it, and I was wearing a wrist. I was wearing a little thing on my wrist, mm-hmm. so it stopped the range of motion.
Mm-hmm.
I was wearing it for a little over a month, and it didn't help, so I ended up getting the cortisone shot. And after about 3 weeks, it went away, but that was about 10 months ago. And it just started bothering me again, and actually, yesterday I made one wrong move. I pushed my thumb a little bit too far down, and it made it really inflamed again. It almost turned purple. And I'm just wondering, because it seemed like after I was wearing it on my wrist, it made it a little bit weaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just wondering if, and they said it was, are you familiar with de Quervain
mm-hmm.
disease?
De Quervain's, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they thought it was. So I'm just wondering if I have to go through that all over again, and if this is going to keep happening.
Are you still nursing your baby?
Yeah.
Okay. I would expect that the frequency of this may decrease when you stop nursing.
Okay.
At 4 to 6 months after you stop nursing, there's a lot of connective tissue changes during pregnancy and lactation that make you more susceptible to musculoskeletal problems.
Okay.
I would avoid another cortisone injection if at all possible, because I think this is probably a temporary problem. It doesn't mean that the tendon isn't weak and doesn't need to be addressed, but I don't think a cortisone injection is in your long-term best interest. So I would wear the brace for vigorous activities, and then I would get on a strengthening program for the muscles in your wrist and hand. And a physical therapist can instruct you in some of those. Otherwise, you know, things that make sense to you, such as gripping, gripping a wet sponge in water, using a rubber band or elastic bands to resist your wrist in all different directions, your wrist and thumb in all different directions, just when you're sitting around. Yeah, I know with the 10-month-old, you're sitting around. But when you're playing, you can have a rubber band and just resist various movements of your thumb to help strengthen some of those tendons. Uh-huh. And then using ice when it gets sore. But if you can get in to see a physical therapist for some specific isolated exercises, that'd be useful. But I'd avoid the injection.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Joyce in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Joyce.
Hi. Good morning. I have a question about the complex region pain syndrome or reflex sympathy. The dystrophy. I'm suffering from nerve damage after having a whole knee replacement, and I've also had an electronic stimulator implanted to block the pain to the brain. But my question is, I'm having difficulty finding a physical therapist that knows how to or has therapy for this. Pain and what exercises to use, and I'm wondering if there's anyone in the area that you know that specializes in this kind of rehabilitation.
And you're in Appleton.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I know some people in the area. I think, Joyce, if you're willing to leave your contact information, I can get back to you. Probably would be tomorrow.
Okay. And, that'd be great.
And because you can certainly over-exercise and overstimulate the nervous system and actually make this condition worse. And,
yes.
But there are some protocols that can be very, very helpful. And I'd be glad to lead you in the right direction.
Okay, that'd be great.
All right.
I'll hang on. Thanks a lot.
Okay, and Joyce, it might take a minute here just to give the number here at 1-800-642-1234. Jim Packard will get to you, Joyce. We'll put you on hold, and he'll get to you to get your number.
I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, we've got her on hold, and we've got an email here from Tony. Who wonders or says, for the past 2 years, I've been receiving epidural steroid injections in the lumbar to relieve some hip and leg pain and numbing. Can these injections be used for diagnosing problems with specific nerves?
Epidural steroids, it kind of goes along with our discussion of sciatica with an earlier caller. Nerves get inflamed, irritated, and there's times steroid injections are necessary to calm it down enough where you can start a rehabilitation program. They tend not to be diagnostic in nature, outside of telling you that it's the leg pain is nerve-related, but it's difficult necessarily to point out exactly which nerves are irritated and where they're irritated. There are other nerve testing that is diagnostic in nature, but basically, if you get good relief with epidural steroid injection, it tells you that nerve is the cause of the major component of leg pain. But like Lori's mentioned a few times with other callers, once you get the pain relief, that's when it's important to start a rehabilitation program so it doesn't just come back again.
And we have Steve with a neck injury. He said, I had a neck injury when I was younger. I also fractured my back when I was younger. I wanted to be a stuntman. Needless to say, I didn't think my body would hurt so much at 40. I hit my head about 3 months ago. It hurt my neck again, and I started having problems with my neck where I could barely turn it. Started seeing a chiropractor, and within a week I was feeling better by using an actuator. Going to the chiropractor seems to help. Should I be trying some other kind of medicine as well?
Well, if it's helping, and helping meaning not only are you feeling better, but your range of motion is coming back, then it sounds like he's on the right course. Once you start getting range of motion back, it's important that the strengthening exercises begin and stabilization exercises. So as long as the strengthening and flexibility is addressed down into the upper back and shoulders as well, as long as range of motion is coming back, then it sounds like he's heading in the right direction.
All right. And Julie in Madison, going back to the elliptical machine, she said, my feet fell asleep when I was on it, too. I noticed that it happened when my shoes were tied tightly. And as you were talking about earlier, Bill, now I loosen my laces before I get on the machine and my feet don't fall asleep anymore. So there's a
fantastic
comment on that. And then John from Madison works in an office where the office chairs are kind of high tech, several controls for raising, lowering, setting the back of the chair. Like to have the chair seat kind of high, and some of them are hard to raise. One day when raising a chair, using the lever while pulling or pushing up with my legs, something pulled in my right knee.
Oh!
Ever since, I've had recurring pain, not all the time, but sometimes I have trouble with control and with climbing stairs, lack of strength and response. Gets his health care at the VA. A bit of a problem there because they self-program to minimize what you tell them. I asked my primary physician about it and mentioned the grinding noise that happens when I bend my knee, which I didn't have before. I was told that this is due to age, years of use, and the strain, whatever, didn't seem to be the problem. What I would like to know is if it's likely that I pulled a ligament or tendon and if it's something that can be repaired. My primary physician didn't feel the need for an x-ray, so I have no idea the extent of the injury.
What most likely happened, given the mechanism of injury and the symptoms he describes, is he fired his quadriceps, or the big muscles in the front of your thigh, to push up. And when you do that with your knees bent in that position, you really compress your kneecap down on the bone below it. And that would be consistent with the grinding sensation that he notes and a feeling of weakness, probably on things like stairs or getting in and out of a chair. So the underlying pathology could be age-related, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't need to be treated. So there are a number of physical therapy exercises and interventions that you can use to help decrease those symptoms in your kneecap. What can happen is if this goes untreated, he can continue to develop further quadriceps weakness, and it puts him at risk for falls. And puts him at risk for further deterioration of his knee. So I would suggest that he go to his primary care physician or his other physician at the VA and ask to see physical therapy for his patellofemoral problems. They'll look at strengthening, stretching, some mobilization, maybe at his hip or knee, and potentially some bracing or taping to help with that. And that can help keep him strong.
And an email regarding Becky with lower back stiffness. Pat, I believe, or Tim, uses a small trampoline for walking, jogging each day rather than hiking on a regular basis. Good idea?
The mini tramp, that can be fine for walking or jogging. You just have to be careful because the surface is relatively unstable. You tend to get a lot of side-to-side ankle and knee motion. And if you have instability around your ankles, if you have some knee pain, you just have to be careful how you do it because you can get a little bit more motion there because your foot is not on a stable surface. Yeah. So it can be good for training if it's done well.
All right.
It's a soft surface, so you don't get the pounding necessarily, but the feet and ankles can take a beating sometimes without the appropriate footwear.
Lita in Menominee Falls has a question for you guys. Let's go there. Hi, Lita.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm a 77-year-old woman, and I tell you that because I have a multitude of problems, but mainly I'm concerned right now about my left ankle. It isn't stable, and I feel like at night sometimes I get just cramps just moving it. I feel I'm not steady on that ankle. And it's important to me that I stay active. I happen to have a very bad knee on the right leg, and I keep delaying having anything done to that because of this multitude of problems. But the podiatrist that I visited put in an orthotic in my shoe and told me, for the ankle, and told me to put moist heat on that under the arch area every night, which I do, and I've seen some improvement. But I'm worried about it, and I bought one of these elastic braces, and that seemed to hurt more, and I didn't leave it because I didn't want to continue to have a problem. Now, as I said, I've got multiple problems. This one could have been caused because I also had hip replacement on that left leg because of an accident, three of those. So I'm just kidding, but when I went to my primary doctor, I said, I don't want to be in a wheelchair in my old age because I'm not there yet. So what can I do for this ankle so that I can be stable and walk?
Yeah.
Well, let's back up. Do you know the underlying reason for the instability? Did you have a sprain or a break?
I hate to tell you, but because I was having some problems, I asked my doctor to recommend physical therapy. And that's where it became aggravated and got worse because putting these bands on and stretching the ankle. I don't think those physical therapists realized what my problem was.
Okay. Well, it sounds like the first step would be to figure out what the true problem is. Strengthening exercises can be useful if there's a strength deficit. But if you have a joint that's too unstable, if you move to the ends of the range of motion, it can create problems. So getting a good handle on the underlying problem is important. There are balance exercises that could be useful. It may be that the bands were too much resistance and you need to start with what's called an isometric kind of contraction. Maybe you needed a lighter band working in a different range of motion. So you might go back and see a different physical therapist, try a different clinic, and you might want to ask for somebody who specializes in falls, balance and falls, because if your ankle feels unsteady, you may want someone to look at it from that perspective rather than just a strengthening perspective.
Yes, that's true, because as I get older, I feel that my balance is not as good as it should be. But because of these multiple problems, I'd like to feel that I'm secure, that I can walk, continue walking into my older age.
And Lita, as an option, instead of the elastic, if you had an elastic brace that you put on,
that's what I bought, right?
You might try a lace-up, and that would allow you to adjust how tight it is. If the other brace hurt because it was too tight, a lace-up brace will give you the option of deciding how snug it should be.
Where would I find something like that?
You should be able to get that at a drugstore.
Yeah,
it's just a lace-up. They use it for athletics, so a sporting goods store often also carries them.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. Well, another question. How would I determine who or what is a good physical therapist?
All right. Well, because we're almost out of time, quickly, what do you do, Bill?
Well, I think Lori's suggestion is a good one. You ask for a therapist who specializes in falls and balance. And all therapists have a certain degree of training in this, but those are therapists that would have special training. Mm-hmm. And considering all the knee and the total joint replacement, I think that's the best place to start. So that's who she should ask for.
And good luck, Lita. Thank you very much. And Bill and Lori, thank you so much.
Pleasure as always.
Thank you. It was fun.
You'll be back on the 16th of February. We'll do it all over again. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Bill Boisenault, associate professor in the UW Medical School. Thanks to them, and thanks to you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.